History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by the U.S. Army, proudly honoring the men and women from every branch of our armed forces whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are heroes around you. There are stories that need to be told before it's too late. Our aim is to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, boy, do we learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, and often we're inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. If you're a regular listener, you know we've been counting down to the 75th anniversary of the Normandy invasion with the stories of those who were intimately involved. Now that that long-awaited anniversary has arrived, we have more to talk about. We've shared with you over the weeks before the words of President Franklin D. Roosevelt and General Dwight Eisenhower on June 6, 1944. And you've heard excerpts of President Ronald Reagan's famous speech on the 40th anniversary. This year, for the 75th anniversary, with the heads of state of the United Kingdom and France there with them, President Donald Trump delivered this tribute to the heroes of D-Day.
We are gathered here on freedom's altar, on these shores, on these bluffs, on this day, 75 years ago, 10,000 men shed their blood and thousands sacrificed their lives for their brothers, for their countries, and for the survival of liberty. Today we remember those who fell and we honor all who fought right here in Normandy. They won back this ground for civilization to more than 170 veterans of the Second World War who join us today. You are among the very greatest Americans who will ever live. You are the pride of our nation. You are the glory of our republic. And we thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Here with you are over 60 veterans who landed on D-Day. Our debt to you is everlasting. Today we express our undying gratitude. When you were young, these men enlisted their lives in a great crusade, one of the greatest of all times. Their mission is the story of an epic battle and the ferocious, eternal struggle between good and evil. On the 6th of June, 1944, they joined a liberation force of awesome power and breathtaking scale. After months of planning, the Allies had chosen this ancient coastline to mount their campaign to vanquish the wicked tyranny of the Nazi Empire from the face of the earth. The battle began in the skies above us. In those first tense midnight hours, 1,000 aircraft roared overhead with 17,000 Allied airborne troops preparing to leap into the darkness beyond these trees. Then came dawn. The enemy who had occupied these heights saw the largest naval armada in the history of the world. Just a few miles offshore were 7,000 vessels bearing 130,000 warriors. They were the citizens of free and independent nations united by their duty to their compatriots and to millions yet unborn. There were the British whose nobility and fortitude saw them through the worst of Dunkirk and the London Blitz. The full violence of Nazi fury was no match for the full grandeur of British pride. Thank you. There were the Canadians whose robust sense of honor and loyalty compelled them to take up arms alongside Britain from the very, very beginning. There were the fighting Poles, the tough Norwegians, and the intrepid Aussies. There were the gallant French commandos, soon to be met by thousands of their brave countrymen ready to write a new chapter in the long history of French valor. And finally, there were the Americans. They came from the farms of a vast heartland, the streets of glowing cities, and the forges of mighty industrial towns. Before the war, many had never ventured beyond their own community. Now they had come to offer their lives half a world from home. This beach, codenamed Omaha, was defended by the Nazis with monstrous firepower, thousands and thousands of mines and spikes driven into the sand so deeply. It was here that tens of thousands of the Americans came. The GIs who boarded the landing craft that morning knew that they carried on their shoulders not just the pack of a soldier, but the fate of the world. Colonel George Taylor, whose 16th Infantry Regiment would join in the first wave, was asked what would happen if the Germans stopped. Right then and there, cold on the beach, just stopped them. What would happen? This great American replied, "Why, the 18th Infantry is coming in right behind us. The 26th Infantry will come on too. Then there is the 2nd Infantry Division, already afloat, and the 9th Division, and the 2nd Armored, and the 3rd Armored, and all the rest. Maybe the 16th won't make it, but someone will." One of those men in Taylor's 16th Regiment was Army Medic Ray Lambert. Ray was only 23, but he had already earned 3 Purple Hearts and 2 Silver Stars fighting in North Africa and Sicily, where he and his brother Bill, no longer with us, served side by side. In the early morning hours, the two brothers stood together on the deck of the USS Henrico before boarding 2 separate Higgins landing craft. "If I don't make it," Bill said, "please, please take care of my family." Ray asked his brother to do the same. Of the 31 men on Ray's landing craft, only Ray and 6 others made it to the beach. There were only a few of them left. They came to the sector right here below us. Easy Red, it was called. Again and again, Ray ran back into the water. He dragged out one man after another. He was shot through the arm. His leg was ripped open by shrapnel. His back was broken. He nearly drowned. He had been on the beach for hours, bleeding and saving lives, when he finally lost consciousness. He woke up the next day on a cot beside another badly wounded soldier. He looked over and saw his brother Bill. They made it. They made it. They made it. At 98 years old, Ray is here with us today with his fourth Purple Heart and his third Silver Star from Omaha. Ray, the free world salutes you.
At that point, the president left the podium to find Mr. Lambert and salute him. You can find that video posted at hometownheroesradio.com. And the president continued singling out veterans who had made the journey.
Nearly 2 hours in, unrelenting fire from these bluffs kept the Americans pinned down on the sand, now red with our heroes' blood. Then, just a few hundred yards from where I'm standing, a breakthrough came. The battle turned, and with it, history. Down on the beach, Captain Joe Dawson, the son of a Texas preacher, led Company G through a minefield to a natural fold in the hillside, still here. Just beyond this path, to my right, Captain Dawson snuck beneath an enemy machine gun perch and tossed his grenades. Soon American troops were charging up Dawson's draw. What a job he did. What bravery he showed. Lieutenant Spaulding and the men from Company E moved on to crush the enemy strong point on the far side of this cemetery and stop the slaughter on the beach below. Countless more Americans poured out across this ground, all over the countryside. They joined fellow American warriors from Utah Beach and allies from Juneau, Sword and Gold, along with the Airborne and the French Patriots. Private First Class Russell Pickett, of the 29th Division's famed 116th Infantry Regiment, had been wounded in the first wave that landed on Omaha Beach. At a hospital in England, Private Pickett vowed to return to battle. "I'm going to return," he said. "I'm going to return." 6 days after D-Day, he rejoined his company. Two-thirds had been killed already. Many had been wounded within 15 minutes of the invasion. They lost 19 just from the small town of Bedford, Virginia alone. Before long, a grenade left Private Pickett, and he was gravely wounded, so badly wounded. Again, he chose to return. He didn't care. He had to be here. He was then wounded a third time and laid unconscious for 12 days. They thought he was gone. They thought he had no chance. Russell Pickett is the last known survivor of the legendary Company A. And today, believe it or not, he has returned once more to these shores to be with his comrades. Private Pickett, you honor us all with your presence.
Again, the president walked over, this time to Mr. Pickett, as did French President Emmanuel Macron, As they did, Mr. Pickett summoned all the strength he had to rise to his feet, helped out by a former NFL linebacker standing behind him. Donnie Edwards runs the Best Defense Foundation, a nonprofit that raised funds to fly many of those D-Day survivors back for the anniversary. We're going to hear from one of the veterans that Best Defense Foundation helped when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.
Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler. Brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by the U.S. Army. Find your place on the Army team at goarmy.com/warriors.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, on a week in which the world paused to honor those who gave their lives, those who spilled their blood, and those who risked their futures for the cause of freedom on June 6, 1944, and all the harrowing days that followed in World War II. We're going to hear more of President Donald Trump's D-Day remarks in a bit. You heard him echo the words of his predecessors, Roosevelt and Eisenhower, as he referred to that great crusade that the liberation of Europe represented. If you watch the speech on television, and I do have it posted for you at hometownheroesradio.com, you could see not far behind the president's right shoulder a well-dressed 93-year-old in a Navy hat named Jerry Deitch. He was 18 when the New York native arrived on Normandy's Utah beach with Naval Combat Demolition Unit 30 in the early morning hours of June 6, 1944.
Well, we trained for it. We did train for it. We trained in England, and we trained constantly. We trained day and night. We trained how the landing's going to take place. We knew everything, except where we were going. We had no idea where we were going. Then we went to a marshalling area, which was 48 hours before we boarded ships to go. When we went in, started the invasion, we went in on the first wave, I was sure that I was not going to see my family again. I saw bodies floating all around me, and you're oblivious of it. You really, maybe because you say, thank God it's not me, but you don't, you just look right past it. It was never happening. Was I in shock? I possibly was. Possibly was. And I think everybody else was.
Well, and let me rewind just a little bit to when you said that, 48 hours ahead of time, you find out this is happening now. You probably have no idea how big this is going to be, how many other people are involved. But what did you understand your mission or assignment or role to be before you went across the channel?
We knew right away that we were going to go in first. And if there were any obstacles that would be in the way of the first wave coming in behind us, that we would take care of that. We would make room for them to land. And in most cases, they couldn't. They stopped their boats in about 4 feet of water. Many of them may have drowned because they had all the gear on them, and they may have drowned because they just couldn't get ashore.
So a few questions come to mind just to try to fill in the blanks for people listening here. This is NCDU 30, Naval Combat Demolition Unit 30. You guys had 100 men in that unit?
I don't recall whether it was 50 at Utah Beach and 50 at Omaha Beach, or it was 100 and 100. It seems to me 50 and 50. But Omaha Beach was tough. They ran against cliffs, and the Germans were above, just throwing everything at them down the cliffs. We came in on regular landing crafts, you know. We got off LSDs, and we got on smaller boats.
Like LCVPs or rubber boats?
Yeah. Not rubber boats, no. LCV. It was cold. It was cold. And it was rough. The weather was rough. As a matter of fact, I remember, and it's going to be in my mind for years to come, going down the ropes. The boats were coming up because of the waves, coming up and then dropping maybe 25 feet, coming up and dropping. And the guys that were there before me down in the boats saying, not yet, not yet, leave go and drop. And they were ready to catch you if the boat was going down. I had two guys catch me, you know. Because of all the gear that I had on me.
Yeah, what were you carrying?
I was carrying a knapsack. I was carrying a rifle. I was carrying a mess kit. And, of course, I had heavy combat boots and a heavy uniform on. And I know that on my back, that was 30 pounds that I was carrying.
And you're not the biggest guy in the world.
I was the shortest one in the unit. Everybody was between 5'10 and 6'4.
And you're 5'7?
5'7.
Uh-huh. And you carrying explosives?
No, what we did was we unloaded the boat. It was just, there were three rookies, myself and two others, and they left us to carry all the explosives ashore. Well, out of, I think there were four of us. Out of the four, two ran, and I and another guy, we carried them ashore and came back, carried them ashore, and we were in 2 foot of water. Of course, it couldn't land on the way.
So this is Utah Beach on June 6, 1944. And what's happening around you? That's what you're doing. But what are you seeing? What are you hearing?
I saw a tank come on just before us. One tank. And I saw people huddling behind the tank, not realizing that we're taking cover. I went ahead and got up to the tank and put my hands out. Like, it was cold. And I thought they were warming themselves. No. And somebody behind me says, keep low, because German 88s were pounding the beach. As the tide was coming in, they were coming closer and closer.
And you saw American servicemen who'd already been killed.
Yeah, had already been killed and getting killed. And the guy next to me in my outfit was killed immediately. He didn't even know what hit him.
How far away was he from you?
Oh, I would say 2 feet. Maybe less than that. He was almost standing next to me.
So how did you experience that?
I don't know. I right now and afterwards, I think I was in shock. I didn't think about it. I thought, going through my mind, this is what I have to do. This is what I have to do. This is the way I have to set up the explosives. This is what I'm looking for.
But you're there, and he's next to you, and then a moment later, he's gone?
Yeah. And you want to know something? It didn't hit me. It didn't hit me. When I got to the hospital 3 days later, that's when it hit me. It hit me that all these guys that I trained with were gone. Soldiers that I didn't know, that they had to be not much older than me.
And you're just 18, yeah. And you mentioned unloading all the explosives and the supplies for your unit. What about the rest of that day? Because it's been famously called the longest day. What were you doing the rest of June 6th, okay. And how long did it feel for you?
We were busy clearing up the beaches with obstacles that were in the way of the guys coming down. We did that without even thinking, and we cleared everything away. Then we had a pillbox that was about, I would say, a quarter of a mile from where we were, and maybe it was a little less than that. And we went ahead and put explosives around there. Nobody, we didn't see anybody. And then we ducked back about 100 yards back, and we saw them coming out, Germans coming out with their hands raised, surrendering. We don't know how many were killed.
So did you blow the pillbox or no?
We blew it, yeah. We gave ourselves 10 minutes, and we blew it. 10 minutes to get out of the way, get the hell out of the way.
So it was after you detonated the explosives that they came running out?
Yeah, they came running out. How many were in there? How many were killed? I don't know. But they came out, and my commanding officer took prisoners and turned them over to the infantry right away. I don't know how many.
And before that, when you said, you know, for the next several hours you were clearing obstructions on the beach, does that mean you're setting explosives on those obstructions?
Setting explosives, yeah. They were obstacles in the way, yeah.
Like those famous tank obstructions we see?
Yeah, and telemines. There was mines on posts.
This is pretty dangerous work, Jerry.
Yeah, but I was pretty on 18 guys. You know, 18-year-old is indestructible.
But you're surrounded by chaos, by death, by destruction. And none of that slowed you down or fazed you or gave you pause?
No, you know when it bothered me? When I was in a hospital for 3 nights. I slept the first night. I was dead tired. But after that, I was up most of the night. On my mind was, I'm never going to see my family again. And I'm not going to see my buddies again. And I went through boot camp and volunteered with. I couldn't get it out of my mind.
Well, and you mentioned a couple times being in the hospital. I'm sure people are saying, hospital? Well, what put them in the hospital? What happened? Tell us a story. What is that story? What happened?
Okay, what happened was, I don't want to blame it on somebody, but somebody in my outfit, we dug foxholes. And somebody in my outfit, when they started a bombardment, they had 88s miles away that were beltering the beach. Someone went into the foxhole that I made. And I looked, and I wasn't going to jump on him. And I just went ahead about 5-6 feet. And all of a sudden, there was an explosion. And I heard a bang on my helmet. And then I went down, and I had a concussion.
Did it knock you unconscious?
Dazed, because I didn't want to go. I said, I'm not going. And my commanding officer says, you are going. Going. I know the medic stuck a flashlight in front of my eyes, and obviously he didn't like what he saw, and he says, you are going.
Well, I don't want to be melodramatic, but I'm just thinking about that moment. And you don't know how big a piece of shrapnel hit you, but
I don't know what hit me. My commanding officer said it was shrapnel all over the place.
Well, and I guess it hit you in the right spot, right?
Yeah, all I had was a big dent on my helmet, and it took a lot to dent that helmet.
And if you didn't have the helmet, it would have killed you.
I would have been dead.
Well, and even if you had the helmet, but that was a few inches lower?
I don't know what would have happened. I would have been knocked out for sure. Here I was in the daze. Then when I got on a ship to take me to it was an English hospital that taken over by the United States Army. They said I slept for 12 hours.
And you said that was the time when you're sitting in that hospital that your mind started to comprehend some of what you'd been doing?
Yeah, I knew right then and there that I said, I'm not going to see my family again. I'm not going to see my buddies again.
But you chose to rejoin your buddies when they told you, you don't have to. Tell me what happened there.
They told me, they said, we could put you on a hospital ship and you go back to the United States. And I said, no, I know that we were preparing. We didn't know where. We were preparing for another landing. I says, they're going to leave for Italy and train there. So I want to be there when they leave for Italy.
So you were gone from the unit for how long?
I was in the hospital for 8 days.
Was anybody surprised to see you when you came back?
My commanding officer said, I was in an Army uniform. They took my fatigues away. And the only thing that left me was with combat boots. And they burnt everything else. So they gave me an Army uniform, which was 10 sizes too big for the little guy I was. And the nurses went ahead and pinned it up for me and did everything. The blouse came down to my knees. and then they gave me free tickets on a train to go to Plymouth, Southern England. I got on that train, and this I remember vividly. The people were buying sandwiches and tea, which was the English drink. Two Englishmen came over to me, and they said, here are sandwiches on us. And at that time, I had tears in my eyes, and I wasn't that kind of guy. Rarely did I get tears in my eyes.
Well, it shows you what it meant to them that so many Americans were over there trying to save their homeland. And so you got back to your unit, and you looked a little funny compared to what they were wearing?
Yeah, walked in, and my commanding officer says, hey, Deitch, what are you doing, joining the Army? I said, does it look like it? I said, I don't even fit with this.
So what happened from there? You had another invasion to make?
Yeah, so from there, you know, they outfitted me with more combat stuff, and they had to give me a rifle and all. And we got on a ship, a troop ship, and we went to Naples, Italy. And from there, we got on trucks, and we went to Salerno, Italy. And there they set up a training base. And the weather there was the kind of weather that you have in southern France. So that's where they wanted us to train.
He would go on to participate in the invasion of southern France and then lead an underwater demolition team in the Pacific. The NCDUs and UDTs that Jerry was a part of in World War II would, of course, pave the way for another acronym you know quite well, the Navy SEALs. Jerry Deitch hadn't really talked about his World War II experiences at all until he signed up to go to Washington, D.C. this year with Honor Flight Southern Nevada. The folks there gave me his name, and I had a chance to visit with him and his beautiful wife, Selma, in their Las Vegas home. I aired an episode with Jerry's full story, and the folks at the Best Defense Foundation heard that interview and invited him to Normandy. He had never felt the compulsion to go there before, and really, he wasn't sure how he would handle it emotionally. But there he was, 75 years after being welcomed by enemy fire that dented his helmet and sent him to the hospital, Jerry was welcomed a hero, shaking the hands of the leaders of France, the UK, and yes, the US. When we come back, more of President Trump's speech honoring the heroes of D-Day. Link to that video, as well as the complete original interview with Jerry Deitch at hometownheroesradio.com. And we'll be right back after this. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses go into your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. Gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.
Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by the U.S. Army. Find your place on the Army team at goarmy.com/warriors.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and the conclusion of our countdown to the 75th anniversary of the invasion of Normandy. At the National World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., there was an around-the-clock vigil in which members of Congress took turns reading the names of 9,000 Americans who were buried at the Normandy American Cemetery. While in Normandy, so many eyes were on our friend Tom Rice, now 97 years old. You've heard about his disastrous jump on June 6, 1944, here on Hometown Heroes. But for the 75th anniversary, he jumped again, a tandem jump over that same Normandy Peninsula he fought for all those years ago. And, of course, you just heard from Jerry Deitch, one of the 60 D-Day survivors joining President Trump and other dignitaries at the official commemoration. And I want you to hear the rest of the president's speech. And a quick aside here, interviewing vets all over the country for more than a decade has taught me that there's always a broad spectrum of opinions about a president's politics. I heard favorable opinions and not so favorable opinions when President Obama was in office, and the same holds true with President Trump. So just to be clear, I'm not sharing his speech with you as a political statement. In my eyes, it wasn't a political speech. It wasn't a Republican or Democrat speech, but an American speech and a history lesson of sorts for those who don't know the story of June 6, 1944, or those of us who may have heard some of it but haven't grasped the gravity or significance. Here now are the rest of the president's remarks.
By the fourth week of August, Paris was liberated. Some who landed here pushed all the way to the center of Germany. Some threw open the gates of Nazi concentration camps to liberate Jews who had suffered the bottomless horrors of the Holocaust. And some warriors fell on other fields of battle, returning to rest on this soil for eternity. Before this place was consecrated to history, the land was owned by a French farmer, a member of the French resistance. These were great people. These were strong and tough people. His terrified wife waited out D-Day in a nearby house, holding tight to their little baby girl. The next day, a soldier appeared. "I'm an American," he said. "I'm here to help." The French woman was overcome with emotion and cried. Days later, she laid flowers on fresh American graves. Today, her granddaughter, Stephanie, serves as a guide at this cemetery. This week, Stephanie led 92-year-old Marion Nguyen of California to see the grave of her brother Don for the very first time. Marion and Stephanie are both with us today, and we thank you for keeping alive the memories of our precious heroes. Thank you. ...9,388 young Americans rest beneath the white crosses and Stars of David arrayed on these beautiful grounds. Each one has been adopted by a French family that thinks of him as their own. They come from all over France to look after our boys. They kneel, they cry, they pray, they place flowers, and they never forget. Today, America embraces the French people and thanks you for honoring our beloved dead. Thank you. Thank you. To all of our friends and partners, our cherished alliance was forged in the heat of battle, tested in the trials of war, and proven in the blessings of peace. Our bond is unbreakable. From across the earth, Americans are drawn to this place as though it were a part of our very soul. We come not only because of what they did here. We come because of who they were. They were young men with their entire lives before them. They were husbands who said goodbye to their young brides and took their duty as their fate. They were fathers who would never meet their infant sons and daughters because they had a job to do. And with God as their witness, they were going to get it done. They came wave after wave, without question, without hesitation, and without complaint. More powerful than the strength of American arms was the strength of American hearts. These men ran through the fires of hell, moved by a force no weapon could destroy. The fierce patriotism of a free, proud, and sovereign people. They battled not for control and domination, but for liberty, democracy, and self-rule. They pressed on for love and home and country, the main streets, the schoolyards, the churches, and neighbors, the families, and communities that gave us men such as these. They were sustained by the confidence that America can do anything, because we are a noble nation with a virtuous people praying to a righteous God. The exceptional might came from a truly exceptional spirit. The abundance of courage came from an abundance of faith. The great deeds of an army came from the great depths of their love. As they confronted their fate, the Americans of the Allies placed themselves into the palm of God's hand. The men behind me will tell you that they are just the lucky ones. As one of them recently put it, all the heroes are buried here. But we know what these men did. We knew how brave they were. They came here and saved freedom. And then they went home and showed us all what freedom is all about. The American sons and daughters who saw us to victory were no less extraordinary in peace. They built families. They built industries. They built a national culture that inspired the entire world. In the decades that followed, America defeated communism, secured civil rights, revolutionized science, launched a man to the moon, and then kept on pushing to new frontiers. And today, America is stronger than ever before. Seven decades ago, the warriors of D-Day fought a sinister enemy who spoke of a 1,000-year empire. In defeating that evil, they left a legacy that will last not only for 1,000 years, but for all time. For as long as the soul knows of duty and honor, for as long as freedom keeps its hold on the human heart. To the men who sit behind me, and to the boys who rest in the field before me, your example will never, ever grow old. Your legend will never die. Your spirit, brave, unyielding, and true, will never die. The blood that they spilled, the tears that they shed, the lives that they gave, the sacrifice that they made, did not just win a battle. It did not just win a war. Those who fought here won a future for our nation. They won the survival of our civilization. And they showed us the way to love, cherish, and defend our way of life for many centuries to come. Today, as we stand together upon this sacred earth, we pledge that our nation will forever be strong and united. We will forever be together. Our people will forever be bold. Our hearts will forever be loyal. And our children and their children will forever and always be free. May God bless our great veterans. May God bless our allies. May God bless the heroes of D-Day. And may God bless America. Thank you. Thank you very much.
President Donald Trump honoring 60 D-Day survivors who were there with him in Normandy, not to mention those others who remain, and the thousands who are no longer with us, especially those thousands who were killed there on France's shores. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you'll join us again next time when we're reminded again through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by the U.S. Army, building a new generation of leaders at goarmy.com/warriors.